Conversations with Friends is a new series.
A series within a series.
Creative conversations between writer friends.
We were blown away by the calibre of the pitches we received from established mid-career debut and emerging writers.
From those writing poetry, fiction, non-fiction, plays, newsletters and PhDs.
Conversations to get you through these strange COVID days and beyond.
Sit back, stay home and enjoy. This episode of Conversations with Friends is with Sheila Gack-Pham and Ashley Callaghan-Blunt. Sheila Gack-Pham is a writer, editor, and producer working in radio, print, online, and film. She has written for a wide range of literary and mainstream publications, with recent work in Running Dog, Griffith Review, Sydney Review of Books, and the New York Times, as well as publications by the State Library of New South Wales and Museum of Contemporary Art. She is currently a judge for the New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards. She has held digital and editorial roles at the ABC and continues to produce documentaries and stories for ABC National, most recently Tongue Tied and Fluent, a five-part series exploring multilingualism in Australia.
Ashley Callaghan-Blunt is the author of How to Be Australian and My Name is Revenge, which was shortlisted for the 2019 Woollahra Digital Literary Award and was a finalist in the 2018 Carmel Bird Digital Literary Award. Her writing appears in Griffith Review, Sydney Review of Books, the Sydney Morning Herald and more. She co-hosts the podcast James and Ashley Stay at Home, which explores writing, creativity and health. Can I just say, when I see New York Times and the ABC.
Oh my God, I stumbled over that.
Yeah, going, I can't. What? It's like all words have gone from my brain because I'm so deeply intimidated that I can't say anything else. And can we also just, I'm going to be very upfront here. I said to Catherine, we're all about frankness. So I'm going to be very upfront and say, I have not yet listened to this amazing conversation because it is in the middle of launch week and I've lost all my words and brain power at all. So Catherine, tell me, but I know Ashley is an absolute star and I'm so excited to hear from this person, Sheila, who I'm so intimidated by. Tell me, what are the standouts from this conversation?
There are standouts. I just will firstly point out though, that it was actually launch day yesterday.
It was launch day yesterday. I'm actually, don't tell anyone, I'm a little bit seedy because I had a few too many glasses of champagne after the event, obviously, not during.
It was very good. It was amazing. We have had a conversation about that off air.
We have.
This you will love. This is a really good conversation.
Excellent.
Ashley, have you read Ashley's book?
I have, and I loved it. Also, because, and I think maybe we talked about this, but or maybe we hadn't because I wasn't fully prepared for how biting it was, like how impressively insightful it was about Australian culture and how many times I was like, oh, wow, yeah, you nailed that, as well as being hysterically funny. I thought I knew it would be funny, but I wasn't prepared for how biting it would be.
I agree, and some of the things have definitely stayed with me. One was that attachment that Australians have to big things, which is that over-attachment, and Ashley kind of points out that many other countries have big things as well. And
much bigger things.
Quite so serious.
I love that.
These guys are great. Sheila talks about something we love receiving, which is letters or emails from readers. So she's a person who has historically and still writes to authors of books often.
Oh, I love that.
I think maybe in her teens or as a kid, Isabel Carmody wrote back.
Oh, I love that. And I love how those things stay with you as well.
Oh, I would have loved that. I love the, was it Obanune?
Obanune, oh my gosh, I know. Fanning Hart. How did they meet? Just tell me how they met.
Well, of all things, they met over the Armenian genocide.
Oh, wow. Which is what Ashley's first book, My Name is Revenge, is all about. Oh, my gosh. That's incredible. Right. Okay. I'm so excited to listen to this.
It's a really good conversation. Very pertinent discussion about being a literary citizen, being part of the literary community. And we really will need to link to Ashley talks about Walter Masson, as I think his name is, and he has some 7 or 9 rules that people should live by.
So I'm going to hunt amazing. Those
down and we will link in show notes.
Excellent.
Okay. Hello, Sheila. How are you?
Hi, Ashley. Great to talk to you today.
It's great to talk to you. I'm so excited to talk to you, and I'm so excited to introduce you to all the listeners of the First Time Podcast and Conversations with Friends, because you are someone who, whenever we talk about writing, I always come away with so much enthusiasm and just feeling so excited because you are so full of ideas and energy, and I love talking about writing with you. So this is such a pleasure. Thank you for doing this with me.
No, thanks so much for thinking of me. And likewise, whenever we talk about writing, I also come away with new ideas and inspiration and a love for Australian literature, which I didn't think a Canadian would be the person who makes me feel that way about Australia.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, great. Well, I thought we could just start by talking a little bit about ourselves as writers. So can you just tell me about, like, you know, when you started writing, for example?
Yeah, I guess I started writing from a very young age. And I think a lot of writers have a moment in their early life where they probably like reading a book and you think, well, I can do this, even if you really don't have any idea about writing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote a little bit in my early years, you know, as a teenager and into my 20s. But I would say that it was really around 2010, so about 10 years ago, that I decided to really take writing seriously. So at the time, I was living overseas. I was living in Thailand, and I subscribed to an American literary magazine called Creative Nonfiction.
Mm.
And I'm not even sure how I found them, but that's what I ended up reading and really loving. And then in 2011, I did a writing course in Paris, and basically it's taken off from there for me.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what sort of writing have you done in that time? And what would you say are maybe some of your biggest achievements so far?
Well, I think early on, I was interested in writing a novel. And then I guess when I did discover there was this form, which was something like creative nonfiction, which was more essays and memoir, I think that's what I became more drawn to. So that's really what I've focused on over the last 10 years. Probably some of my best pieces are the most recent ones, because I feel like I'm constantly improving in terms of my craft. So even like the last few months, I wrote an essay for the Sydney Review of Books about Vivian Pham's novel, The Coconut Children. And I think that piece for me was probably one of the strongest pieces of writing I've done to date.
Oh, that's a really beautiful essay. And you have a wonderful part in there where you talk about the concept of the anti-library, which I'd never heard of before, but was just amazing. I love that piece. Everyone should go check that out on the Sydney Review of Books.
And so what about you? When did you start writing seriously?
Well, I wrote a lot as a kid, and particularly as a teenager. I wrote a couple terrible novels before I was sort of 22 years old. And I think had the awareness to recognize that they weren't good, but they were good learning experiences regardless. And then I didn't write for a few years because I was traveling and I was learning Spanish and, you know, I just didn't really make it a focus. And then when I was in my mid-20s, I decided, okay, now is the time I'm going to write, you know, I'm going to write a book. I made a really serious decision to pursue writing. And that was the end of 2009. So interestingly, right around the same time as you. And I thought I knew a lot more than I did because I'd taken some creative writing courses in uni, and because I read a lot, I was like, oh, I know how to do this. I just need to sit down and do the work. And that was kind of disastrous. The first book I wrote, which I did 140 interviews for it in 3 countries, and, you know, did a lot of research and tried to pour all that into the book. And then the first draft was 200,000 words. And I didn't know enough to realize that that probably was a ridiculous length.
What, 140 interviews?
Yeah, I did interviews. I started with my family in Canada, and I actually got a grant to go out and interview them because they lived in a different city, and sort of the Armenian community there. And then I spent 2 months traveling in Armenia, and I interviewed literally anyone who would talk to me, who either spoke English or who I could get a translator for. And then I interviewed a lot of people in the Sydney Armenian community as well to get another perspective on Armenianness. So, and then I just, when I sat down, I didn't know how to, like, what to include and what not to include. So I just decided, oh, well, in the first draft, I'll just include everything, which, not a good decision. Don't do that. If you're at the start of a project, that's not the way to do it.
But that's such an incredible amount of work that you put into it. But actually, I was just going to ask you about your travels, though, because during my 20s, I also spent a lot of time traveling. And I think travel blogging was basically how I kept up my writing for many years. Did you have a travel blog? Is that what you did as well?
No, I didn't. I had journals though. I've always been a journaler. I have journals going back to when I was 14. So I wrote a lot in my journals, and I don't think it was necessarily useful in terms of writing because it was so personal, but I think it was good just in terms of keeping a practice, for example. But I don't think it improved my writing skills at that time. The way I've journaled has changed a lot since then. But at that time, I was very young, and it was just basically a lot about heartbreak and, you know, the emotional turmoil of being in your early 20s.
But I think there is that practice aspect, which is really important. I've never been very good at keeping a diary, actually, but I did start blogging. And I think that had some kind of impact in terms of developing a discipline around writing.
Right. Yeah, I could see that. And have you ever gone back and used any of that material that you wrote at the time in your later writing?
Not a lot, but yes, recently I did publish a piece on Running Dog, which is a great website if anyone wants to have a look at it. And I was writing an essay in response to a work of art, and it did draw on one entry I kept as a blog entry. And so there are things like that which just help me remember important moments from my travels.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's really great. I was so glad I kept my journals because I used a lot of the material that I wrote when I sat down to write the book that's been most recently published, which is How to Be Australian. I was so glad I had all that information about how we felt when we first arrived and what I thought Australia was going to be like before we came here. I actually have an entry that I wrote, you know, while we were traveling. Like while we were en route to Australia, I wrote an entry about how I was convinced that living here was going to make me happy and it would be like a whole fresh start to my life. And I had this like just intensely rose-colored glasses for just what the act of moving here would do for me.
Yeah, I think that's why diarizing actually is really important in trying to capture memories, because we do tend to forget things. We have a way of rewriting our memories very easily. So I think it makes sense then that you're able to go back to your early diary entries and think about your first feelings when you got here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's been great. So, and I think that comes back to the fact that both of us, I write creative nonfiction, but both of us have also experimented with fiction. My first two books, like I said, the disastrous ones, those were both novels. And then I came back to fiction, actually, when I was doing my master's degree in creative writing. I came back to fiction because I had an idea. I wanted to write about this particular act of terrorism that took place in Sydney in 1980. It was the assassination of the Turkish consul general. And I wanted to write about it, but I wanted to write about it from the perspective of the people who could have done it. It's been almost 40 years and that crime still hasn't been solved. So we don't actually know who did it. But in terms of the group that did it, the group of people, we know that much. And so because that's all connected back to the Armenian genocide and all that research I did, and then my family heritage, I wanted to write that. And I knew I had to do it as fiction. And so I decided I'd do that as part of my master's degree. And that novella turned out really well. So now I'm actually looking more to get into fiction, even though my first full-length book is a memoir, is How to Be Australian. So,
and it's all your work, actually, with the Armenian genocide, which really brought us together, you could say, because I've been interested in the Armenian genocide for a little while as well. My first exposure to it was actually traveling at the time in Syria. So this is back in 2006, and I went to Aleppo when I was traveling for a month in Turkey, and then I crossed the border over with my then boyfriend, and that's when I first discovered that there had been this genocide that had occurred like 100 years before. And I had never heard of it growing up in Sydney, but I live quite far from the Armenian community. And anyway, I ended up referencing these ideas in an essay later. And at the time, my mentor was Walter Mason. And he said, once he'd read it, he said, "You really got to meet my friend Ashley." And so it was really the Armenian genocide that brought us together.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that fact about us, because Walter then said to me, "Oh, you've got to meet Sheila. She's just wonderful. She's really interesting. And she's been writing about the Armenian genocide a little bit." And so Walter Mason is a local author. He's the author of two books, Destination Saigon and Destination Cambodia. His partner is Vietnamese and he speaks fluent Vietnamese. So he sort of has that connection for you because Had you read his book before you met him? Or how did you end up working? Because he was your mentor. How did you end up working with him?
You know, I kind of remember the exact order of things, but in 2015 or so, I was awarded a writing fellowship by Westwards. And I just had this idea of writing an essay for Southerly, a literary magazine, which was around the ideas of war and peace. And because of my own family history, where my parents left after the Vietnam War and they lived through a war, I ended up bringing together all these different ideas I had around war and survival and living in Australia. Yeah, to be honest, I can't remember exactly how it happened, but I asked Walter to be my mentor and he agreed. And I mean, he was such an enthusiastic reader and I mean, I loved his book about Vietnam. I just found it such a funny and interesting outsider's take on Vietnam. And he's able to see and write things that I'm actually unable to because I'm a bit too close to it all in some ways. I also learned a lot from him about the importance of literary community.
Yes. And that is something that Walter is very, very passionate about. And it's something. So here's how I know Walter is that I moved to Australia in 2011, as is all documented in my book, How to Be Australian. And I was really determined to get more involved in things. I was a very, very, I used to think I was introverted, but actually I was just shy. I actually just had a lot of anxiety because I'm actually quite extroverted. And so when I moved here, one of my goals was I'm going to get more involved in things. I'm going to sign up for things. I'm going to go do things. And so someone I'd met had knew I was writing this giant book and recommended I check out the Emerging Writers Festival Roadshow that was happening at the New South Wales Writers Center in 2012. And so because I had this attitude of, yes, I'm going to sign up for things, I went and did that. And it was a one-day event. And one of the speakers was Walter. And, you know, there was lots of great speakers that day, but he shone out so brightly. He's so funny and charismatic and he's just got such great advice. So I got his book and then I ended up, a few months later, I went to a book launch and he ended up being there. He was launching the book and we ended up chatting and anyways, we became lovely friends. But he has written about the concept of what he calls the literary ecosphere and literary citizenship. And he has some really great advice for people that I always pass on. He has 7 points that basically come down to buy new books from local bookstores, subscribe to literary magazines, attend author events, be a fan, campaign for the people that you're a fan of, and embrace generosity. And his writing on this is fantastic. And he really lives by those tenets. Like he's always talking about other authors and sharing their books. And he's really just been really lovely. And so he sort of taught me about the writing community. And it's, I mean, I've written about, before either of my books were published, I wrote about how, you know, Walter, through following his advice, ended up getting a publishing contract. He talks about how he got a publishing contract from an event that he hosted, and someone who came along to it was a publisher and ended up saying, oh, I'd be really interested in reading your work. Why don't you send it to me? And so I wrote an article where I followed his advice for a year and wrote about all the different, you know, things that I did to follow his advice. And at the end of it, I did not have a publishing contract. And I said, that was absolutely fine because I just love being in the writing community so much and I have met the best people and I'm so happy just talking about books and writing that it's, you know, it doesn't even really matter to me if I get a publishing contract because I'm so happy in this space. And I think our conversation today and our friendship is a testament to the literary community. But so did you have much of a concept of the literary community before you met Walter?
No, and I think because I was more of an emerging writer, except when I first met Walter. But through Walter, I really got a strong sense of this idea of literary community, which I don't think I had really conceptualized in that way. But I really did take his message to heart. And I think from that time, I really contributed in different ways. Some of the things you mentioned, I definitely do as well, and buy books and support other writers. But for example, I'm a bit shy with talking about books and writing too much on social media platforms. So I basically try and support people in other ways. And I'm a mentor to many emerging writers. And as well as I often these days, I've made a huge effort to actually just email writers once I've read their work.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So that's something that I decided was really important as well. Like, it doesn't necessarily promote people's work, but it helps people like feel like that their work is being read and appreciated in a very real way. So I often will write to people whose articles I love or people whose books I love. So I will often just reach out on Twitter or on email and contact them directly just to let them know that their work has, you know, found an appreciative audience.
And that's so lovely. I have to say, like, I mean, I'm sure you've received emails like that too, but just with my new book out, like hearing from people, especially when they tell me what parts made them laugh, which just, and you know, the book, I wrote it for an Australian audience, but obviously there's lots of stuff that new arrivals to Australia would appreciate. So I love it when, you know, like, born and raised Aussies tell me which parts made them laugh, because they're always very different parts from the parts that made newcomers laugh. So I really enjoyed that. It's really, so it's great that you're doing that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And it must be so fortifying to like get those messages of encouragement, like, because as a writer, you're often, you know, writing by yourself in a very solitary fashion, but I guess to have a book out in the world, you must be experiencing so much joy and so much love actually from the community at large.
It has been so wonderful. It's been so nice. Although I got my first 1-star rating on Goodreads recently, and I was really excited because I felt like it hit like a mark of like achievement, because of like, you know, I've got enough reviews that I've got a 1-star review, but they didn't explain, like, it was just a rating. They didn't leave any write up to go with it. So I don't know why. I don't know what motivated them to give me 1-star. And I feel really ripped off that I didn't get the write up with it.
Isn't Goodreads, though, isn't that one of those platforms that you shouldn't be looking at, though, once you've got a book out? Because books take on a life of their own. And I mean, it's probably nice to read the positive reviews, but it probably can be quite hurtful if you read negative reviews.
I've been waiting. I feel like that's a lesson you have to learn through experience, and I have been waiting for that. It hasn't happened yet, but it's gonna happen eventually, and then I'll be on the other side of the fence being like, no, I never read Goodreads. I never look at it. But so far, everything that's been written has been really lovely, and I feel really lucky to have received so much enthusiasm from readers. So that's been really nice.
Actually, now that I'm, you know, talking to you about this, it makes me think that even when I was a teenager, I often did used to write to authors back then as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So for many years, I had this correspondence with Isabel Carmody, who's an Australian fantasy writer who I absolutely loved, you know, for many years. And for quite a while there, like, she was so kind in like replying to my handwritten letters to her. And she really encouraged me, actually, in terms of my own interest in writing.
That's so lovely.
Yeah, and I think even back then I did have this idea that with writing was one way for you to find like-minded people, that once you put something out in the world, that's how people can find you or respond to your work directly.
This is exactly why I write, is because I feel like even though writing is so solitary, like you're sitting, you know, often by yourself, just like with your thoughts and your computer, like I write to connect with people, and so like having the books out in the world like has really made that come to fruition in a much stronger way. But even before that, like I said, through my writers group, like my favorite part of each month is when my writers group meets and we get to discuss, like, just really deeply engage in each other's writing. And that connection you had with Isabel Carmody, it sounds like that was really encouraging for you, and that's just so lovely of her to take that time to do that. Like, I think book people are the best people. It's really just, that's my conclusion.
But I have to say, though, that I don't think I have a writing group in the same way that you do, though. So when I talk to you and I see that you're very active with your writing group, so what does it give you to have a writing group to support your work?
Oh, I'm a big proponent of the concept of failing fast. So I really like getting feedback quite early on for most things. Like there's some projects that I know are too raw and I don't share them until they reach a certain point. But for example, with the when I was writing How to Be Australian, I had first envisioned it as a book of essays. And so I was sending around, my group meets once a month and we each exchange about 6,000 words, which we read in advance and we comment on, and then we get together and discuss. And so it was great to have them looking at, you know, the concepts I was playing around with and getting early feedback, because there were certain parts that, like, it was clear just were not going to work. And I scrapped those from the book entirely really early on, rather than, you know, if I hadn't had the writers group, spending a whole lot of time on those concepts just for them to not end up in the book in the end. So I feel like that getting that feedback early is great. And also just having people who are invested in your project, like people, you know, people in my writers group, some of them saw that book basically almost from conception. So they were reading through it with me for 5 years, and now it's out in the world. So I think having those people who are sort of cheering you on from the sides while giving you very useful feedback is, like, for me, that's great. But I mean, you are one of the most productive writers I know, like, considering, like, you're a mom of two kids, you're also doing a PhD, and yet you're still always getting these great pieces out in the world. You were involved with Sydney Writers Festival this year and did a podcast for them with Vivian Pham. So, like, how do you be so productive?
Well, I mean, that's a big question about how I manage my own life, but
that's true.
But in some ways, I'm always writing, even when I'm actually not sitting down in front of the computer. Like, I'm often thinking about ideas, and I guess that's just how my mind works. But I have to say, it is a huge challenge being productive when you have two young children, and I have an 8-month-old and a 3.5-year-old.
Yeah.
I think it's really great that you've managed to find a group of writers that you really trust with your work and that you can work closely with, because for me, writing, I really enjoy doing it as a solitary activity, but I have to say that having a mentor really works for me personally. So the last little while, my mentor has been Marie Duchel. So she has been reading my essays. So the last couple of essays, which I feel like have been really, you know, high standard, is because I've had very close editorial support from a very experienced and excellent writer herself. So, and I remember years ago, actually, when I did a writing course with Catherine Heyman. So this would have been like more than 15 years ago now. And at the time, she used to talk about this idea of mentorship through writing. And I had never heard of it. I'd only just barely heard of writing classes. And she had mentored, I think, Mark Haddon, who wrote the book, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. That night. Personally, really see the value of really elevating my writing, like, through someone who can read it closely and give me very clear feedback. So I think that model works for me better as a writer than, I have to say, like, a group setting that what you have.
And I think that makes sense, because everybody will find different things that work for them. And I guess that goes back to, you know, the concept of, we've already sort of gotten into this, but, like, do you have a specific writing process? Like, as you said, you sort of just find pockets of time whenever you can.
Yeah. So, I mean, for many years, I guess I often would wake up and write first thing in the morning, but I never really called it like my practice. That's not really how I thought about writing. And I think that's where, like, you know, people have their daily pages and there's different processes. But for me, I've always just written in quite an organic way. So I just sit down and write whenever I felt like it, basically, which was often. But I didn't have a specific time. It was often in the morning, because that was just usually when I was had the clearest head. But I'll just note down ideas or writing whenever I get a chance. And when you do have children and other commitments, it just ends up being a luxury anyway to have a specific time. So really, you do just have to do your best to fit in writing around, you know, life, basically. And what about you? Like, what's your writing practice these days?
Well, I used to try to very specifically get up every morning and get either a certain number of words or a certain number of hours. I've tried all kinds of different ways. And I had a pretty regular and sustained practice. And then I ended up getting a chronic illness in 2017, and that derailed everything in my life. Like, it basically shut down almost my entire life for quite a while. And I was so glad that I'd invested those years in developing a writing practice, because all of a sudden I was home alone so much of the day and I was too sick to do anything. But when I did have little bits of energy, I could sit at my computer and I could work on, you know, the book that I'd already started. That was when I was working on How to Be Australian, and I was glad I was so far into it, particularly because there's so much humor in that book. So I could sit there and sort of just trying to make myself laugh, and that really made me feel better. So, but now I'm still grappling with the illness. So I'm still sort of like you, just squeezing it in wherever I can, because my energy levels are so unpredictable. I can be fine 1 hour and not functional the next, depending on the day. So yeah, I've just find I have to just be patient with myself and make the time when and where I can. So that's just how it's going to be for a while.
Yeah, that must be really hard. I mean, at least for me with young children, I know that at some point it gets a little bit easier. And I also chose to have children. So, you know, I can't blame anyone else for that fact either. So I think the writing, I just have to be clear to myself that this is just a difficult time to find the headspace and even just the hours to write, sit and write. But at some point, though, I hope in a few years that things will get easier.
Yeah, your kids will go to school eventually, though. And yeah, you'll have hopefully have some more time then. But yeah, this is an especially intense time with a toddler and a baby. That's yeah. And yet you're still doing your PhD. You're incredible, Sheila.
Thanks, Ashley.
We were going to wrap up on talking about the role of humor in writing. So what are your thoughts on the role of humor in writing, Sheila? I know you use it, like, for example, you have a great essay in Griffith's Review number 64 that's called Love Virtually, which is about online dating. And it's a little bit of reportage, a little bit of memoir. It's really great. And you, like, even that first line is really funny. So I know you use humor in your writing.
I think that's my goal, actually, as an essayist, to basically put humor into my writing, because I think that feels truer to my personality. And so that's when I know that the gap between what I'm thinking and how I'm feeling kind of narrows down with what I actually end up writing on the page. Because writing humor is quite risky in a lot of ways. Like, it's not easy to be funny. But I mean, I think back to when you and I have gone to see stand-up comedy together. So obviously we're both very appreciative of that form, and you yourself have actually, you know, got up on stage as well.
Yes.
I think with writing, it's so important to be able to have like light and shade in it, you know, so that it's a really enjoyable experience as a reader as well. So I do think about how ideas are received. If you can be funny, that can have a lot of cut through, and it's really powerful to make people laugh as well. With topics like internet dating, though, it's inherently a very funny thing as well. Like, it's much harder to find humor, I would say, in a topic like war and genocide. But how did you go about that then, trying to infuse humor into, you know, writing about the Armenian genocide, for example?
Initially, the book I wrote was so that 200,000 word book, technically it hasn't been published. It sort of morphed into what became my first book, which is My Name is Revenge. And that book doesn't have a lot of humor in it. It's quite serious. And that book is half novella, and the novella is completely serious. And then the second half of the book is essays. And they sort of provide some history on the genocide, as well as some memoir about my family. They draw on some of the interviews I do. And I did manage to have just a few moments of humor in there, because like you said, I think that lightness really is a great counterbalance. And generally, I make fun of either myself or my dear, long-suffering, wonderful husband. So for example, I talk about how he used to give me a really hard time because I'd talk about, when people asked me at dinner parties what I would do, I would tell them that I was researching the Armenian genocide. And he pulled me aside one night. He's like, you shouldn't talk to people about that. You go on and on. And he just felt like this was an inappropriate topic for dinner party conversation, which I just thought was hilarious. But so I put in little light moments like that.
I remember that part in your essay, actually. Yeah, no. And it is a funny, I mean, although having said that, I suppose I really understood where you were coming from more. Maybe I'm that kind of person too at the dinner party who brings up inappropriate topics as well. So,
well, the thing is, though, I would bring it up and then people would ask me all these questions, because they often, like, so often the reaction was much like yourself when you were describing traveling in Syria. You find out that this thing happened that, like, you feel like you should know about, like, it's a fairly major event. It was actually the blueprints for the Holocaust. And it's sort of like, well, how do I, as, you know, an educated person, not know about this? And so they have all these questions. So, but Steve didn't recognize that. He thought I was just going on and on and boring people, but actually they were the ones driving the conversation. I don't know if you feel that way too, and with some of the things that you bring up, but I think often people are really, you know, people want to know and better understand how events like that happen. It's often they don't shy away from it, I find.
And actually, I think back now to even something we did together years ago. I guess this was early on and when we first met. And then we went with Walter and Tung to see that documentary by Shahani Bakarian. And I can't remember how that all happened, but somehow I was there with you watching this documentary about the Armenian genocide.
Yes.
But that experience really stayed with me, actually, and particularly the Q&A afterwards. And so I remember the idea of language came up. And so it's something I thought about for a long time, so that when I did a documentary series for Radio National last year with Masuka Fukui, one of the communities we looked at was the Armenians. And I think that the seed for that idea, part of it was that after that Q&A, that after the film we saw together.
I loved that episode you did, which is available as a podcast still, I believe. But you go up to there's a full-time Armenian school, and you go up there and you interview people. And what I didn't know was there are students there who aren't Armenian. I think one of the students you spoke to was Venezuelan, but is in a full-time Armenian school learning in Armenian day in and day out, which I just found fascinating. Like, what an interesting cross-cultural experience that must be for that student.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really unexpected find for us as well. But I suppose, like I said, our friendship kind of started was through the Armenian genocide, which sounds really odd. But I mean, I think it's because we're both part of diasporas, and that's what one major thing we have in common. And maybe our writing explores this in different ways. So even your latest book, essentially, it's because you're a member of now the Canadian diaspora living in Australia.
Yeah.
And your first book was about being part of the Armenian diaspora. My writing often explores this terrain as well. And these things are complicated and complex even. There are no easy answers. There's a lot of difficulties over many generations. But there are lots of funny things too, I guess, about being part of diasporas.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly, I mean, it's a lot easier to be funny about being part of the Canadian diaspora, because even just that phrase sounds a little bit crazy, even though it's very accurate. So yeah, the new book is, I think, even if you look at the covers of my two books, like the one is very dark and the other one's very bright and obviously humorous. So I think the two books actually sort of counterbalance each other a bit. But yeah, I think, like you said, this is the great thing, is that if I hadn't been writing this stuff, I probably never would have met you and I never would have got to connect with you. But it's been so rewarding, like our friendship throughout the years I've known you and this conversation today. So I guess we should probably wrap up. Is there anything that you wanted to say before we end?
No, I just want to say, yeah, obviously, you know, you've been a huge part of my writing life too, like the last few years.
Aww.
And just every time I talk to you about writing, and I think right at the beginning, I said that, you know, you've been someone who I think about now in terms of Australian writing, because you once told me, I think when I visited you once at your place, and you told me you almost exclusively read Australian authors, which I found amazing, since I do not have that habit at all. But it did make me think maybe I should try a little bit harder. Like, and I do read a lot more Australian writing now than I ever did. And even earlier this year for the Author for Fireys bushfire auction, I ended up bidding on Half Wild by Pip Smith because through your recommendation.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, so I've got a copy sitting on my shelf, which I will get to eventually. I'm not sure when. And that's another thing I want to say. Like, ultimately, in terms of writing, I just think the most important thing is actually reading.
Yes.
For me, I'm a reader first and a writer second. And that's how I became, you know, interested in writing, was because I loved books and I read a lot as a kid, and I've never lost the habit of reading. And even now, I think it's just so important to read and think. And writing, if you can do it, is such a gift, actually, to be able to process the world through writing.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the perfect place to end on, actually. I absolutely 100% agree with everything you just said. And that's definitely, like, what motivates me to write is processing the world and then being able to connect with people through that. So thank you again so much, Sheila. I hope we have many, many more conversations like this in the future.
Me too. Thanks, Ashley.
Cheers.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. The First Time Podcast is produced by Phoebe 80 and supported by Writers Victoria, the ACT Writers Centre, and our wonderful patrons. This series is supported by the City of Melbourne through a COVID-19 arts grant.